In the matter of Edward Harrington Hayburn, can we please have appearances?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. Ryan Moriarty, Assistant Ethics Counsel, on behalf of the Office of Attorney Ethics.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Edward Harrington Hayburn appearing pro se.
Mr. Hayburn, have you submitted any papers to the court?
I did.
When?
The 18th.
Thank you. Mr. Moriarty?
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and good afternoon, members of the court. This matter comes before the court following a motion for reciprocal discipline filed by the Office of Attorney Ethics pursuant to Rule 1:20-14A. Following respondent's finding of unethical conduct in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, where he received a 3-year suspension there. The equivalent RPC violations in New Jersey would be RPC 3.3A1, RPC 8.1B, RPC 8.4A, C, and D. Now, pursuant to Rule 1:20-14A4E, the Disciplinary Review Board found that the matter before the court today warranted substantially different discipline than that 3 years imposed in Pennsylvania. That higher level of discipline being disbarment, which the Office of Attorney Ethics concurs, is the appropriate quantum of discipline in this matter. The underlying conduct which brought this matter before the Pennsylvania disciplinary system and here before the court today involves respondents seeking pro hoc vice admission in a medical malpractice matter in Monroe County, Pennsylvania. Now, Mr. Hayburn was admitted to practice law in Pennsylvania. However, he was administratively suspended for his failure to comply with the CLE requirements and pay his annual assessment, similar to what we have here in New Jersey. However, he was admitted in Pennsylvania. In December 2017, he agreed with co-counsel to represent a client in that medical malpractice case and filed a petition for pro hoc vice admittance. Now, that pro hoc vice admittance application is where the unethical conduct began. First, it required Mr. Hayburn to disclose all jurisdictions in which he was admitted. He disclosed New Jersey. He did not disclose Pennsylvania. He did not disclose his administrative suspension as part of that application. Second, there was a requirement that the admitting attorney, the attorney sponsoring Mr. Hayburn, make certain representations, and those representations include that Mr. Hayburn had no prior disciplinary history and had no other admittances in any other state other than New Jersey. Now, that was also inaccurate, because at the time of those representations, which was in January of 2018, Mr. Hayburn had previously been censured 2 times. Prior to that, the Disciplinary Review Board had issued another decision recommending another censure, which the board was considering at that point and later did impose that censure. And as indicated in a footnote in the Disciplinary Review Board's decision, he had another matter pending, but he did not disclose that as part of his pro hoc vice application. Now, that pro hoc vice application was filed with the court, and after it was filed with the court, it was rejected because it was an improper form. So we got sent back to Mr. Hayburn and to the other counsel, and they again submitted it with those misrepresentations. That second application was accepted by the court, and Mr. Hayburn was allowed to be admitted pro hoc vice. He thereafter participated in the proceedings, and at the end of that, the judge who presided over the matter discovered that Mr. Hayburn did have a disciplinary history and that the form contained misrepresentations, filed an ethics grievance with the Pennsylvania authorities, which gave rise to these proceedings in Pennsylvania. A complaint was issued against Mr. Hayburn after he did not cooperate in the disciplinary proceedings below. Similar to what we have, they provided notice to him, gave him an opportunity to respond. He did not. They issued a complaint against him, which he acknowledged service and was required to file an answer, which he did not file an answer. However, towards the tail end, he did participate in the proceedings, entered into a disciplinary stipulation, which ultimately resulted in the 3-year suspension by the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. Now, that on its own would likely result in a significant suspension if we look at the case of In re Bernstein and some of the other cases cited by the Disciplinary Review Board in their decision. However, what we have is the main difference here is Mr. Hayburn's extensive ethics history. This is the 8th matter for your court's consideration in the past 10 years for Mr. Hayburn. And of those 8 matters, they are not matters of record keeping, although one is record keeping, of minor issues. What we see throughout the history of Mr. Hayburn's unethical conduct is deceptive conduct. Deceptive conduct which benefits Mr. Hayburn and harms his clients and the public. Times where he has lied to his clients. Times where he has made misrepresentations to them. Directly negatively impacting them. And then we have this matter here, again, where he's making misrepresentations to the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania to surreptitiously gain admittance in a jurisdiction where he's administratively ineligible to practice. And even at this very moment, where Mr. Heyburn faces a recommendation of disbarment, where he has been served with an order to show cause by this court requiring him to file a brief by October 27th, to file an oral argument form by, not by October 27th, but by no later than October 27th. He doesn't. And he submits a brief on November 18th, a brief that the OAE had to provide to the clerk of the court so that they would have time to provide it. And based off of Chief Justice Ravner's question, I'm not entirely sure it's gotten to you. But in that brief, respondent opines or argues that, one, this motion is improper, that he should not be able to face any higher discipline than the three-year suspension, completely ignoring his prior ethics history. And when he filed that motion, he did not provide any explanation as to why he failed to comply with the court's order to show cause. He did not seek to have it filed nunc pro tunc. He did not provide any excuse or explanation. But he does say he needs more time to reflect upon his transgressions. At what point is enough time? Was it the fourth censure? Was it the six-month suspension? Was it the year consecutive suspension that he's been serving since January or since February of this year? Mr. Heyburn's words ring hollow. His actions ring much louder. As he stated in his in the Pennsylvania disciplinary matter, he knew better than to file that application with the misrepresentations. He very well may have known better, but what we have before the court today and what the OAE has reviewed is that despite what he may have known, his actions speak louder. And as a matter of progressive discipline, based off of everything that's before this court, the OAE urges the court to adopt the recommendation of the Disciplinary Review Board that as a matter of progressive discipline, respondent should be disbarred. And if the court has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Moriarty.
Thank you.
Mr. Heyburn.
Yes, sir.
May it please the court. Most of the facts are not in dispute. I have a stamped copy of when I filed, and it was late. Wasn't quite sure how I was going to address this, but I ultimately did file a late brief on the 18th. I do have it time stamped, so the clerk's office should have had a copy. I can provide proof of that. And I just wanted to address a couple of things. Rule 120-14A, which governs reciprocal discipline, specifically states that it does not permit substantially different discipline than that imposed by the foreign jurisdiction. This court just 3 years ago addressed a similar issue, but that one involved an attorney misappropriating client funds in a foreign jurisdiction. That was in the matter of Joseph Peter Barrett, 238 NJ 517, a 2019 case. In this court, the OAE, like here, sought disbarment, even though the foreign jurisdiction only imposed a 150-day suspension. And this court recognized that typically misappropriation of funds is where that results in disbarment, and clearly that is not here, and it's never been a case where I've misappropriated funds. And the court said, this court said that it was inappropriate to rely or use or impose the ultimate sanction of disbarment for a suspension in 150-day suspension in a foreign jurisdiction, even though if those funds had been taken in New Jersey, it would have been appropriate for disbarment. And as a result, the court did not disbar that attorney. I think it's worth just discussing the internal nuts and bolts. Under Rule 120-14A, you don't get an independent hearing here. You go right to the DRB based on the order from the foreign jurisdiction. So you don't get to lay out a case. So when I was preparing counsel statements about my cooperation with disciplinary counsel weren't exactly accurate. It was during COVID. I did contact counsel. Their allegations were accurate. I had filled out a, I'm sorry, I didn't prepare a pro hac vice motion. Somebody from another office did. My mistake was I was doing three different things at one time. I read it, and when I read it to mean, was I under an active suspension? Clearly, had I only been doing one thing at one time, it would have given me pause. I probably should have made a phone call.
It was an affidavit, was it not?
I'm sorry?
Wasn't it an affidavit?
It was an affidavit, right.
But you filled out, it wasn't like somebody else was preparing motion papers and you didn't.
Somebody filled out the affidavit for me based
on. But they gave it to you to sign.
Right. Right. And I'm not saying that I'm not, I'm clearly, I know as an attorney, I'm clearly responsible. If I sign it, I'm responsible for it. But, you know, part of the process, I'm thinking, what did I do wrong? And what should I have done so that this doesn't continue? And at that time, I remember I was doing three different things. The secretary came in, I read it, but I should have, it should have alerted me to stop what I was doing, make a phone call and say, because some of the language said under suspension, and I wasn't under suspension at that time, but I should have made a phone call to Pennsylvania to see if I have to disclose all of my disciplinary history. And this was a case where I wasn't getting paid per se to represent the case. I was sitting second seat with a colleague on a case that was extremely difficult, and at least we viewed that it was unlikely we were going to recover, but the case had to be tried. I should have slowed down, and my biggest problem is not slowing down on matters. I should have slowed down, asked questions, and then disclosed my disciplinary history.
How did the secretary know what to include in the affidavit or what to leave out?
The firm had filed previous pro hac vice motions. So.
But I mean, factually, specifically, how did they end up saying that you were a member of the New Jersey bar, but not the Pennsylvania bar?
Well, I mean, they knew that because I had handled other matters. And I'm sure, Your Honor, I honestly don't remember a discussion. I'm sure there was a discussion about some of the facts. The problem with not disclosing that I was in Pennsylvania, had been admitted in Pennsylvania, is I let my Pennsylvania license lapse because I just never practiced in Pennsylvania. And then on that motion, I didn't appreciate the importance that I had to say, oh, I was licensed in Pennsylvania, but I didn't continue with my CLEs and I didn't renew my attorney registration, and thus I'm on the administrative list. So I should have slowed down, read things carefully, made some phone calls. I had never filed a pro hac vice motion before. And clearly that was not the time to rush through and sign off on a document of that importance. So, then I was advised by Pennsylvania. I guess where what counsel's saying and what's different from what I remember happening is the allegations that Pennsylvania had notified me of, I called the disciplinary counsel and said, I really don't have a defense to this. Although I didn't intend to deceive the court, I understand as an attorney, when you sign an affidavit, you're responsible. And it doesn't really matter what you thought or what happened. Ultimately, I signed it, I was responsible. The disciplinary attorney at that time had recommended less than a year suspension. That was rejected by the New Jersey Supreme Court. And he said, well, we should just have a hearing. And at the hearing, I laid out, and I know you were provided a copy of the report from the hearing, and it was attached to my brief. I laid out exactly what I did and what was wrong. I didn't try to defend myself or make excuses. I said, I should not have done this. I should have slowed down. I should have read. I should have asked people. I should have been clear before I signed that. And ultimately, if I understood it the way it is, I should have laid out my disciplinary history. And the worst case scenario would have been my pro hac vice motion for sitting second seat would have been rejected. And that would not have been a big issue in my life, nowhere compared to this. But I didn't, and I accepted the consequences. Ultimately, the New Jersey Supreme Court, ultimately the Pennsylvania Disciplinary Council recommended a suspension of a day and a year and a day, which turned into 3 years when it was reviewed by the Supreme Court. I relied on this court's rules indicating that there wouldn't be substantially different discipline. So when I'm facing what a Pennsylvania presenter says, you know, we're recommending a year and a day, I'm definitely not thinking I'm going to get disbarred in New Jersey. I don't know what my strategy would have been, but it clearly would have been different if I thought I was fighting for my license for the rest of my life. Now,
can I ask you a question?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
The concern of the disciplinary process is to protect members of the public.
Absolutely.
In light of the extensive record that we see of your mishandling cases and being disciplined on multiple occasions in the past, what assurances can you give us that if you were allowed to practice law again, there would be no harm to clients?
First, I'd just like to say something and then address that exactly.
Go ahead.
So these incidents occurred years ago around the same time. I was disciplined, the order was issued January, so I wasn't suspended until February of 2022, and then this suspension came afterwards. So Office of Attorney Ethics is always arguing, well, he should have learned from those suspensions, but it would have been retroactive because it was 2 years before those suspensions. The suspensions had a devastating impact on my life. Obviously, I had to close my practice. I had to tell all my current clients they had to get new attorneys. It was humiliating. I'm essentially on the verge of bankruptcy because I haven't been able to work for a year. And because all of these comments, all of these documents are online, I haven't been able to get even the simplest job applying, you know, for minimum wage, because once you Google my name, it's the first thing that comes up. So it's absolutely destroyed me, and I accept responsibility for it. It's tested my 30-year marriage. And it's made me reflect on who I was. I always thought of myself as one of the good people. I've done a tremendous amount of pro bono work for the most recent one. I had represented an indigent person who was charged with murder. I ended up doing that for free. And there were three hung juries. And I spent 7 years doing that for free. And I always thought that I was an attorney doing good. When I look at what's online and what the court has found me, I don't feel that way. Obviously, I feel like I've disappointed the court, I've disappointed myself, and I've disappointed some clients. I personally, once this started breaking, I enrolled myself in counseling, and the focus of the counseling was, how can I be more of an honest person? Because whether it's not paying attention to detail, whether it's not calling back a client, it's not working. It's destroyed me. And based on that, I've started to be more honest and accept the consequences. And that's what I did in Pennsylvania. Clearly, if I could go back and change that affidavit, I definitely would, but I couldn't. So I had the hearing. I didn't make any excuses for my behavior, and I did exactly what one should do in that situation, and I took responsibility for it. And this court in Ray Hughes, 90 NJ 32, 1982 opinion, indicates that the court should accept mitigating factors, like when an attorney takes responsibility for their conduct. So Your Honor asked me, what can you be assured How can the court be assured that this conduct won't continue? And the first part is, I had never faced discipline at this level before any of this. These are all recent. I haven't practiced since this discipline. So we are looking at the year and a half and the 3 years in Pennsylvania. If this court agrees with me and imposes another 3 years, that'll be 4.5 years. I'm 56. So I'll be, you know, if everything went my way, I would be in my early 60s. It would give me a short period to sort of show the court that I can be an honest attorney. I can rectify these mistakes and I can learn from them. And I know that the mere number saying 8 prior misconducts, you know, some of those were relatively small. The first one had to do with, I was a certified civil trial attorney, and apparently I missed the registration to renew the attorney certification, but I had continued to have the emblem on my letterhead, so I was sanctioned for that. So some of them were relatively small. Some of them were serious. Some I misrepresented to a client that I had filed an appeal in a matter. Even though I wasn't obligated to file the appeal, I told them I would, and I actually never did. And that was serious. I ultimately took responsibility for that. The best I can tell you is having gone through, which is my own fault, but having gone through what I did, I can't imagine not walking a straight line after that. Because a mere signature jeopardizes your license. I don't think I would ever sign my name or submit something to a court without thinking about that, without thinking about the question Your Honor has asked me. And I guess the last point I wanted to make is I did notice that this court was considering a policy about reinstating attorneys who have misappropriated clients' funds and were disbarred. And I don't know what the status of that is, but it would seem unfair to disbar me where I didn't misappropriate a client's funds. I didn't steal from a client. I did make some mistakes, and I took responsibility for those mistakes, but it would be a situation where they might be able to get their license back even though they stole from clients, and because I didn't disclose my ethics history to a judge in a foreign jurisdiction, I end up being disbarred, not having the same benefit as they do. So I apologize to the court. I fully accept responsibility for my actions, and I'm not arguing that there shouldn't be a penalty. I'm just saying the penalty should be what is in the rule, substantially similar punishment as was imposed in Pennsylvania. Does any of the justices have any questions?
Thank you, Robert. Let's end recess for the day.